Voices Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Strength Depositions Podcast. We're sitting here at the world-famous Strength Depot Gym in Plymouth, Michigan. I'm Chuck Zarowski, and I'm sitting here with one of my co-hosts, Mike Folks. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm all right. It's hot in here today, isn't it? And plus, it's kind of loud in here, so everybody please excuse the noise, but people do actually work out here. So, Mike, what's new?
Not much. Just got back from the park with the family and done some training yesterday, but I might get in and do some GPP stuff.
Like, what are you going to do for GPP?
I'm thinking about pulling the sled and dragging the sled for a little bit and doing some pharma carries, but we got squat party. Hopefully it's squat party tomorrow because it's the 4th. I haven't really talked to anybody about it, but I'll be here.
I'll be here, too. Mike, can you tell me what GPP is? I mean, can you kind of give me an idea of it?
It's general physical preparedness. I guess it's kind of popular now, popular term now, the new kind of strongman form of cardio, being generally physically prepared for, I guess, multiple different types of tasks.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because, like, we've talked about it before in the past. We've talked about, like, you know, I'll do 20 swings with a sledgehammer on a tire, and I'm winded, but my grandfather could work up from sun up till sundown. It's just pretty amazing. So we're pretty honored today. We train at Strength Depot Gym, the world-famous Strength Depot Gym, and Shane Rickman is one of the owners. Well, we happen to have the other owner, Tina Kinsley, on today with us. Tina is one of the most amazing athletes you're ever going to find. She actually just did the U.S. Strong Woman. She tied for first in the whole damn Masters category, and then she took second overall, and I believe it was to a professional, too. So, I mean, Tina's been an Olympic lifter, a power lifter, a strong woman. Not only that, she's a gym owner, she's a doctor. She basically shits rainbow. She's amazing. She's amazing. So, Tina, welcome to Strength Depositions Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks, Chuck. I definitely do not shit rainbows. Not true.
I don't know, Tina. I beg to differ. So, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm honored that you asked me to talk. I don't think that I'm all that interesting, but I'm happy to talk about the things that I know about. The powerlifting thing was a very brief stint. I don't think we need to talk about that at all. But I definitely have had decades of experience with strength sports and I always have pretty high goals that I set for myself, and so far I've been meeting them.
So, Tina, how did it all start? Like, I mean, we always want to hear people's stories, like, in the beginning, and we want to hear, like, you know, like, I started with the sand, you know, dumbbells or whatever. How did this whole thing with strength start with you?
I don't want to really date myself totally, but when I was in high school, let's say that, there was...
Like 10 years ago?
Right. There was... women's bodybuilding was kind of coming out, being a bit more mainstream, and so when I was like 15, I had a weight bench and weights, and they were the crappy weights that you'd buy at Kmart or Sears or whatever.
Did they have their sand in them?
They did. Okay. And my girlfriends at the time, we would go get drunk, but then we'd come home and we'd lift weights. So it was an interesting juxtaposition there. So that's where it started, and then it languished there for about 10 years while I sowed my oats and did things that I'm not going to talk about on tape. And then I got through college, started medical school, and that's when I really, really started to pursue fitness and just overall kind of body composition changes. So I went through a bodybuilding stage. I was in figure for a brief minute and kind of transitioned more into non-aesthetic sports after that because they're just kind of perilous for women to do. I think they really destroy your body image and you never feel normal again unless you're extremely lean and amenorrheic. So So I had to transition out of that, and that is how I got into actual performance-based strength sports.
For people who don't know what amenorrhea is, it means when you get very low body fat, when women have a very low body fat, their estrogen level gets a little lower, and their hormones go all in flux, and they tend to not get periods. During that time, they can't menstruate, and, I mean, you know, it's an awful time for a woman, because menstruation, I mean, and I don't know, because I'm, you know, maybe I do menstruate, who knows, right? But, from what I understand, menstruation is, you know, it's a part of being a woman. And I've talked to several bikini competitors when they get, like, lower in body fat. They have a really hard time with that because, you know, it's almost like, well, I'm still a woman, aren't I? Is that true?
I didn't miss the period part of things at all, but it does lead to osteopenia, so you lose bone density when you're not menstruating. It's just, estrogen's really important in overall women's health. But just, you know, I actually had 18 months where I was amenorrheic, so I had a long period of time that I was not able to function biologically as a female because my body fat was somewhere between 10 to 12% year-round. So that was about 30 pounds ago, actually. So that was an interesting time in my life, but I started bodybuilding, did a couple shows, I don't know, came in second. I was very thin. I was about 120 pounds, soaking wet. And then transitioned into figure. So that all happened during medical school internship and residency, which most people probably don't know what that entails. So medical school is 4 years of grueling study. This third and fourth year is clinical rotation, so you're in the hospital, you know, working 80 hours plus a week, seeing patients and getting beaten upon by the residents and the attendings. And then internship is after medical school. You do your first year kind of as no specialty. You do everything, and you really, you're finally a doctor, and you're kind of put through the fire there. And then residency is your specialty training. So I'm a dermatologist, so that's an additional 3 years after internship. So, and the other thing, too, I should mention, when I was in medical school and internship, I trained for my first marathon, too. So I was doing physique stuff and trying to do long-distance running, and it was not a happy wedding at all.
So you're taking a fast twitch, like, you know, basically bodybuilding is trying to enhance fast twitch muscles, which are, like, the larger ones, the stronger ones, and then you're running a fucking marathon, which is all slow twitch? How does one do that?
My legs were extremely confused. I don't know. I just, you know, I kind of pick goals in life in general. I always have. I just decide what I'm going to do, and then I just do it. So I wanted to run a marathon. It was important to me to run a marathon. Oh, there's a backstory to that, though. Let me give you that. So when I was in medical school, I smoked from the age of 15 till the age of 32. And
so you just quit?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I smoked till the age of 29, excuse me, not 32. Yes, I just quit. And the only way that I was able to successfully quit, even though I was in medical school, seeing people with chronic lung disease, was for somebody to tell me that I couldn't do it. So when the person that I was actually married to at the time told me he didn't think I could quit smoking, I basically said, fuck you, I'm going to quit. And in order to do that, I started running. So the running was a substitute for the nicotine addiction, and I kind of got addicted to running and had like a 2-year stint where I never missed a day. I got at least 3. So it was pretty crazy. So I guess I'm one of those people that balls out. Whatever I do it 100% full on from the get-go until I'm done. And then I check the box and I move on to the next thing. So I did my marathon. I trained through internship. I still have sleep difficulties because of the problems that I induced with that training schedule. I can't sleep. I wake up too early. But I did my 26.2 miles, and it was a horrible experience, and I never did it again.
Hey, Mike, for somebody to, like, tell you, like, if they put a gun to your head and they say, look, you're going to die or you're going to run 26 miles, what are you going to do?
That's not happening. Like, if you ever see me running, you better come, like, turn around and head in my direction, too. Yeah. There's something that's following me that you do not want to see.
That's what I said. If you ever see me running, run with me. Or if you ever see, like, a naked man running, run with that man because there's some scary shit coming. Especially me, because I'm... And then I'll be part of that, too. So, anyways, Let's get back to the strength aspect. So you were, you know, you started doing physique sports and you started to do like bodybuilding because, I mean, that's what was prevalent at the time, right? Like, do you remember who was like like the big time? Was it Kim Krzyzewski? Was it Linda Murray?
Yes.
Okay.
And then also, I can't remember her name. The blonde. She was very popular.
Monica Brandt?
Nope, before her.
I really had a thing for Monica Brandt. I'm just
Monica Brandt was figure, so it wasn't her. It was.
She was perfect.
I can't believe I can't remember this woman's name because I loved her. But
it wasn't Bev Francis.
No, it was around that time though. I think I don't remember.
Oh,
she
it was
a little bit
Corey
leaner.
Anderson.
She was one of them, and then there was somebody that was Dutch or Danish or something.
Oh, Anya Anderson.
Yes, yes, I loved her. So I just wanted to look like her, and I was very physique oriented. I wanted to be muscular. I wanted to be lean. And so that's why I was drawn to those sports. But like I said, the kind of mental picture, the pieces that go along with that whole process are just not healthy for me personally. So I was not able to stay on that path. And I honestly was a boring asshole when I was, getting ready for those competitions. I wouldn't go out with anybody to do anything. If it wasn't on my diet plan, I wouldn't eat it. I was not fun to be around. So when I finally transitioned out of that and got into more performance-based sports, I actually just felt a big sense of relief because now it was just about what I could do, not about how I looked, which is always an objective, subjective measure. And performance is an objective measure. It's either a time or it's a weight or it's a something that you can actually say this happened. It's data. It's a number. So it's just an objective measure. And I didn't want to be judged and objectified despite my many years trying to be. So I transitioned into, then I went into Olympic lifting.
How did they transition? Like, how did you go? Because it's a very difficult transition for people who don't understand. Because when you're trying to just think about your physique and how you look, how does it transition into Olympic weightlifting?
So it was just random. I don't know how many listeners know who Joe Sheffield is, but he used to be the trainer for one of my good friends. And she invited me to train with her one day, and he showed me a power clean. And I was just, like, it was the coolest, explosive, fast, cool-looking movement. And it was so gratifying to actually catch something in the rack position quickly. And, I mean, I sucked at it. I was terrible, but it was such a rush to do it, just to have it be a completed rep, that I knew that I wanted to do that where I could just get better at this stuff. So I kind of played around with it for a long time. I didn't have a coach. I was trying to learn online. This was, a long time ago. There wasn't as much material available.
What year was this about?
Oh, God. It was like 90. No, I'm sorry, not 90. It was like probably mid-2000s, 2005 or so.
Okay.
2003 to 2007-ish, I will say, is when I started to come into this stuff. So I ended up having... I was in the military, too, and I guess we haven't talked about that. So I was in the military for 17 years. I just got out 4 years ago.
What
and
branch?
I was in the Air Force. They paid me to go to medical school, so they then kept me for many years thereafter to pay them back. So I moved all over the country. So I was in Maryland, and then I was in Korea, and then I was in San Antonio, and then I was in Northern California. So when I got to Northern California, I was actually able to find some Olympic lifting coaches. Jim, why am I not remembering his name? Jim Schmidt was out there, and he was actually Olympic weightlifter, and was coaching people in the area. So I kind of hooked up with him, and he got me started with actually, eyes on coach, which was helpful. And then I sort of stalled out, was competing and such. I wasn't really, winning, but I was still coming in the top three usually in my weight class, which was 58 kilos at the time, so I was tiny still. And then I started training with Ivan Abajayev, who is the Bulgarian Olympian coach for the 1972 Bulgarian Olympics team.
I knew that.
They all got busted for steroids and whatever, and he trained people still as if they were taking tons of anabolics, were 18, and could sleep when they weren't training, which was not the case for me. I was working full-time on seeing dermatology patients, then going and training 2 hours at night every night. So, but under him, I got enormously strong and really fast and good. So unfortunately, I also got completely burned out on the sport because all I did was front squat, snatch, clean and jerk and front squat to match max every day. So, and that was 5 to 6 days a week, sometimes twice a day. And so I just, you know, I kind of started having the problem where you cry when you go before you go take your lift. And it just was, again, mentally not healthy for me at that point. And he's Bulgarian, so he didn't understand, like, the crying. He just would look at me and shake his head and speak broken English at me, like, why you cry? And I said, I'm just, uncle, you're killing me. I can't do this. I'm too old. And he's like, shut up. Get on the platform. Lift the weight. So, I mean, it just, it was a really big part of my life. It changed me in a lot of ways. I really learned to deal with adversity. But when I was done with Olympic lifting, I was done with Olympic lifting because it was just so intense all the time.
Do you feel that the Olympic lifting helped you transition into strong woman compared to maybe going into strong woman straight from figure or bodybuilding?
I think that I wish the Olympic lifting transferred as much as it should. I find it has helped me in cleaning like the axle, but it's not the same movement. It's not a rotating bar. There's no whip to the bar. There's no spin to the bar. So it's different, but the mechanics of the setup are similar. So I think it's helpful there. But, and it's where it's been very helpful for me is actually jerking weights, because that's what I did at Nationals. I just jerked the weight overhead.
Snatch, clean and jerk.
Yeah,
jerk.
I know. It's all like very filthy.
Yeah,
I know.
Like
but I, you know.
Baby.
So I jerked the weight over my head multiple times. some dirty boys here. You know, so that's actually how I can be successful at rep-based kind of axle overhead events where I can press it. I don't have to press it. I can just jerk it. And I can do that repeatedly.
Me too, Christina. Me too.
So that's been helpful in that respect. But as far as the other lifts, like the sheer power things, I mean, I never was strong. I mean, I wasn't deadlifting 300 pounds as an Olympic lifter. I was doing like a 200-pound deadlift. And it didn't matter because I never was deadlifting more than I could clean. So it was really just a means of adding strength so you could clean more. But I wasn't primarily working on power from the floor other than to accelerate it quickly, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know what? The one thing that I do see, though, with, like, Olympic lifters, and I see this, like, often, and it reminds me of kids, like, whenever, like, you see, it reminds me of, like, when you have a kid, like a 5-year-old kid, the Russians had all their kids play soccer. The reason they had them play soccer was because, I mean, they're obviously doing muscle biopsies, too, at that point, but they're trying to get them to play soccer because it works on all those gross motor patterns, the running, the jumping, the sprinting. And, I mean, I got my kid into soccer early just because, you know, I want a mutant. But but I also see, like, people that are Olympic lifting and that are really good at Olympic lifting. They know how to fire their muscles in a certain pattern. They become very good at that and exploding in a certain pattern. And I really believe, although I've not done Olympic lifting, everybody that I've seen that's done it is a great fucking athlete. Like, you always see athleticism in these Olympic weightlifters after, like, let's say they transition to something else. You look at Shane Hammond, and Shane Hammond, who was it? It was a Christy McDonald? Is that her name, I think? Christy, I forget her name, but she was in the Olympics as well. But these are really large human beings, but, I mean, the explosiveness and the strength that they carry over, I think that makes them athletic. And I also feel like, I mean, I would assume, because, again, I've not done Olympic lifting, but, like, when you're doing a clean or you're doing, like, an axle press or you're learning a new movement or a new pattern, which is kind of what strongman is, you're learning different types of events, I would assume that you have a better grasp of, like, getting the knack for it than a lot of other people would. Do you see that as a truism or no?
I think it's been kind of variable, honestly. There are some things that I pick up quickly and some things that are a little bit more challenging for me. And
The jerk is good.
The jerk I got, yeah. No problem. But stones, you know, when I first started with stones, I could barely pick up the 125-pound stone off the ground. It just was awkward. So it wasn't, there was no way for me to grip it. It's just a different kind of way of doing things. Once I get something down, I tend to get better and better at it over time, and I refine it. But sometimes the initial learning, if it's not something that's a real fluid movement that I can hold with my hands, it tends to be a little bit more of a learning curve for me. So, right, Chuck, like that. And I got that move. Like, for example, the yoke is difficult for me because it's just a bunch of weight on my back. But moving events I'm really good at because I'm fast and I'm athletic. I can move quickly with weight in my hand or whatever. So it's been a mixed bag, and there are definitely events that I'm not great or not as good as I'm going to be at. but you know, I'm really pleased with my kind of growth in this sport in less than 2 years of really being serious about it.
Now we're talking strongman.
Strongman. Sorry, I jumped out of Olympic lifting. So so there was a CrossFit little period between there too, but that was kind of, you know, I was dating a guy that owned a CrossFit gym, and you kind of have to. So once I injured my knee, I got out of CrossFit immediately because I was very angry that I couldn't even bodyweight squat for 6 months.
Did they throw up like programming and shit like that? I had a
guy that was programming for me from afar, and he does a lot of competitors. Like I'm a masters athlete, so he does masters programming, and he's a masters CrossFit competitor who's made regionals and national, whatever the games are. And so I was having him program me, so because I just always want to be the best at whatever I do, or the best that I can be. So luckily I have disposable income, and I can like pay for people to write my programs. I can pay for body. I can get the things that I need to actually achieve the goals that I set for myself. Right? Snap. I mean, this is a lot of work to get to this point. I did not start. I started out very poor. Well, very low, lower end middle class, but I really worked hard to succeed, and so I will put whatever resources I have available, I will put them into whatever basket I need them to be in to bring me the fruits of the labor that I'm performing. So that's what I do. And, you know, Shane can tell you, I mean, I'll buy whatever piece of equipment in this gym I think is going to help me. Everybody gets to use it, but I'm going to buy it because I want it. And, you know, we buy stuff, too, just for the gym to have. But there is a lot of esoteric equipment in here that has been purchased because my eyes fell on it, and I said, I want that.
The glue blaster?
The Brett Contreras made $600-some-odd off me for something that people set their drinks on now. So, and we also have a Mike Bartos Power Center, which gets a lot of use from other people. I have yet to use it, but I got it specifically to bring my deadlift up. But unfortunately, I was training for nationals and was doing 13-inch deadlifts, so there was no reason for me to do the rack at that time. So hopefully I'll start using that. But there's a lot of little nicks, you know, things around here that their only reason for existence is because I thought they might help me get better at something, and I'm not ashamed to admit that.
Well, you know what? It's funny because, like, that power rack that you were talking about, what is it again? What's it called? Because I don't know the name of
Mike Bartos.
Bartos? Yeah. Okay. It's kind
of... makes the stone of steel, which I also bought because I wanted the stone of steel.
Well, it's kind of cool. That rack is kind of cool because it keeps your shins vertical. So your shins, it has, like, something on the back where, you know, you can place your shins next to it. Keeps your shins vertical so you can get your ass back farther, so you're getting more of a contraction in your glutes and more in your hamstrings.
Yep.
Like, the weird thing about this gym, about Strength Depot, and I think we've talked about it probably every fucking time, is it's almost like Shane and Tina are collecting baseball cards. So, like, you'll come one day and you'll be like, oh, Lou Gehrig rookie. And essentially it'll be like a 45-degree hyper, or it'll be like, you know... Yeah, a Mickey Mantle or a Ty Cobb, basically, because, you know, Strength Depot has, like, glute ham raises. They have, like, Donnie Thompson's got, like, the fat pads, and he's got, like, the, I mean, we basically got everything.
I love that fat pad. Like it's nonstick. Like, you don't slide on it. You don't need, like, chalk to chalk your back or anything. I really love that fat pad.
Like, what's your favorite piece of equipment in Strength Depot?
Oh, the Rogue Power Rack just seems like it's hardcore. Like, it's big, thick, has, like, a lot of different attachments. You can do a lot of different things on it.
I think, like I said, it's as far as for gym owners, Shane and Tina are unparalleled as far as I'm concerned. Like, I've been in different gyms my whole life. And, yeah, I've been in, like, you know, powerlifting gyms and... I've been in private gyms before. I used to train at Detroit Barbell. I've been in, like, a lot of different really cool gyms and stuff like that. But, and I've said it before, Shane and Tina bring a sense of community that you hear about in CrossFit. Like, you hear, like, CrossFit's big thing is, you know, it's a sense of community. Everybody's, like, you know, everybody is, like, cheering for everybody else. Well, you have that here, but you have some of the strongest people in the state, not only the world, in this gym, and it's everybody's family.
It's not just simply like the friendly community. Is for me too. It's like a friendly, like, competition type of thing. You see somebody who might be a little bit stronger than you, or a lot stronger than you, and you know you have that drive. You have
Jose,
right? a lot. You have that drive. Somebody to focus on to kind of try to, you know, get stronger. Whereas in a box gym, at a Lifetime, at a, you know, wherever, you like, you don't. Like, for me, I personally didn't have that. You know, like, I didn't care for it. I didn't care for, like the corporate, global type of thing. I like the hardcore, the private, you know, gym. And this is like a godsend for me.
Okay, so we've heaped praises on Strength Deep, but we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. But I'd like to get back with, like, you and Strong Woman. Like, how did that start? How did Strong Woman really start? And then, like, I mean, you said you've only been doing this 2 years, but I saw you in the U.S. Nationals last week or the week before. I saw you kick so much fucking ass. And I saw you beat the guys. I saw you beat, like, women handedly. Like, people couldn't lift a stone, and you were doing it. Like, I have a video of that. I think I posted that on my Instagram.
Oh, nice.
Of yeah, the strength depositions Instagram. Please go to it and check out Tina Kinsley. She's lifting a stone. How big was that stone, Tina?
It was only 175.
175, fuckers. It was 175 for reps. So, I mean, you got to take a look at it. But how did that transition start, and what do you love about it? That's what I'm interested in. Like, it seems to be that anything that you desire, like anything you go for, like you said, 100%. And I've, you know, nothing stops you from doing anything you want to do. So how did Strongman go? What do you like about it? And where do you see yourself going?
Well, Strongman is Shane's fault because we started dating. So he's a strongman and I was injured from CrossFit. So he just kind of, you know, said, well, why don't you? And I said, oh, why not? So then I went to the place we were training then, which was in Redford at Chris Huff's gym, which was, it's P80, but the times we could train there were very limited, so 8 p.m., whatever, weekends we had as well. But that's what got me into it, and and then we, training in that place, you know, our times were so restricted, and we just started talking about, well, what if we opened our own place and kept it private, and then we'd have somewhere to train. We could train with only people we want to train with. We could charge a nominal membership fee, which I think our membership fees are pretty damn cheap for everything that we have here.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, like we could charge double what we charge, but we're not making money. I'm using this. I quite honestly use every loss that I have here as a tax write-off. It's good for my end-of-year income tax so that I get, you know, don't give quite as much back to the government that I normally do. And, you know, we're able to kind of just have this place where we have about, like, 58 cool, really cool people that we see on a very regular basis.
Chuck and Mike.
Yep, of course, top two. and we're just, you know, we're really fortunate that we are in a position where we can turn away business here if the person doesn't fit our facility. So that's why we've made such a, so that's a part of what made me really interested in Strongman even more so, was that we developed this facility where I liked everybody that was there, and I was truly invested in them, and they were truly invested in me, and it just spurred me to even greater heights than I would probably have achieved on my own. And additionally, I worked with Clint Darden remotely. He was writing my programming, which was helpful, but I didn't have eyes on, and so some things are not correctable by video analysis. I mean, sometimes you just need real-time corrections. So that's when I started training with JJ Thomas and Stephanie Marsh and Aaron Janowitz, who were lightweight competitors at Nationals, and the three of us training together is what really, really brought my stuff like up to speed. Because 10 weeks ago, I was really concerned that I was concerned about every event at Nationals if I would be able to do it, other than the overhead, which I knew I'd get. But everything else, I was a little concerned about the sandbag run. I hate sandbag. I fucking hate sandbag. I really, really loathe sandbag. And it was a 160-foot run. It was a long run. And I, you know, I smoked it. And that was an event I did not think I'd win. I won that event. The stone, I've had, like, shitty stone kind of loads for the last 6 weeks. Somehow it clicked that day, and I won stones. The events I thought I'd win, axle press, I got third, not first. It was shocking. Farmers, I got second, not first. I thought I was, like, a bat out of hell. But the woman that won, Kim O'Loughlin, who's strong as shit, she beat me by, like, 1.7 seconds. And, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. So it's humbling. And the deadlift as well, which I could not deadlift that weight from that height with an axle 10 weeks ago. I was able to do for 8 reps in a suit. She did it for 10 reps with no suit. So she's clearly stronger than I am. However, overall, athlete to athlete, we, at the end of the day, we were tied for first. So I'm really happy with that. But that would not have happened if we didn't have this facility with the people in it to push me and help me and, you know, sometimes tell me to man up, woman up, when I'm being, whatever, I'm being a downer or depressed or overwhelmed or whatever. It's just, it's a good environment for me personally. Just say penis.
Ladies and gentlemen, JJ Thomas has entered the building.
Hello, all.
J- JJ, we've been trying to get JJ on for I don't know how long. Months.
Then Chuck keeps lying to me and telling me we started at a certain time and then starting late.
You're like my girlfriend. I just lie to you. yeah, I love you.
Oops, I'm sorry.
That's okay. But, okay, so we were, again, let's talk a little bit about Strength Depot. Like, the inception, like, the only thing I can say is, like, I came in, I had heard about it. JJ Thomas, who is here, is one of the owners of Detroit Barbell. JJ is going to do, like, I want to get JJ and you and Shane, and I have another friend, Jesse, and I want to get some gym owners on that own private gyms. And so, because you always hear, like, these meatheads talk about, like, their dream is to own a gym. And it used to be, JJ just went, yeah, right. You always hear, like, every like, meathead wants to own a gym, and it used to be a Gold's Gym and a powerhouse. Now it's, like, a little box gym. But, JJ, how many years have you owned Detroit Barbell now?
We opened up November 26th, 2014. Clay Brandenburg and I opened up the gym.
14? No. 2004.
Oh, 2004. I'm sorry.
Gym owning will fuck your head up.
That's hard.
So you know, JJ's been in business for 13 years, almost 14 years now, JJ and Clay. And Tina, this was established in 2015, right?
Years ago.
Okay. So my question is to you guys is, how do you get a successful, how do you run a successful private gym? I mean, how is that possible? Because when you did it, JJ, there weren't that many around. There was no CrossFit. There was no anything, right?
Yeah, we were one of the first private quote-unquote hardcore gyms in the country. I mean, we kind of modeled our ideas after Westside Barbell, and yeah, there were not very many. I would say, I mean, five or six that you've actually heard of, and it's not easy. It's not fun, but I mean, if you have a passion for it, it's worth it. So
how did it come about, JJ? Is it okay if I ask a couple questions of JJ? How did that come about? How was the inception? Because you were a young punk kid when you opened that shit.
Yeah, we used to train at a gym in Southgate, and we had a little disagreement with the owner. So Clay and I sat down with Tom Pierce, who had a lot of gym equipment, and we were contacted about 10 of the current gym members that were at the gym we were training at, and we said, hey, we're going to start a little hardcore gym. Would you guys join? And they said, yeah. So we're open up for about a month, and we had our grand opening. We had about 20 more people join in and took it from there.
You've had how many different locations in that small area?
Just two. We went from 1,500 square feet to what is now 3,000 square feet. We've been in 3,000 square feet for, I don't know, 12 years or so. We were there for about a year and a half in the 1,500 square foot building. Okay. So.
So, like, what would you say, like, you know, like, I mean, because, again, Westside was unique in the fact that it had all these people and it had this mad scientist running it. And there was a lot of, like, you know, people had heard about Louis Simmons in Westside because Louis brought all the Bulgarian methods and the Russian methods to light, particularly when Elite FTS came on board in, like, 98, because Dave Tate was talking about that. So, like, getting more and more people, do you think it's like, do you feel Detroit Barbell is a communal type sense too? And like, when I trained at Barbell, like, I remember people, like, you know, people talking about their kids. Like, I used to bring my son in Detroit Barbell all the time before, like, you weren't able to really bring kids anymore. But like, I used to bring my son there, and, you know, Layla and Clay's daughter's name is Maya. Okay. But we used to bring our kids there and stuff like that. And that was one of the perks to me was, because, you know, dogs would be running around and stuff like that, and you don't have to worry so much about, like, you know, you don't have to worry so much about, like, the douchebags or the fuckboys, whatever you want to call them. It's just people with the same common goal. How do you feel that was instilled, or do you feel that was already in the people, or do you feel that was just a part of the gym?
Just a part of the gym. I mean, a lot of people had kids after we opened up the gym, and we had, I mean, everyone been bringing their dogs in for at least 10 years, so it's like a family. So, I mean, everyone's, you know, people stand up at each other's weddings and they're best friends for the past 10 years, you know. So it is more like a family than just a normal gym would be. It's the same thing here. There's kids here at Strength Depot, and there's dogs here almost every day. And just, it's, again, it's more of like a family atmosphere.
Now, JJ, like, as far as for what you do, you train here at Strength Depot as well. You train people over at Strength Depot, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So how many years have you been training people? Like, I mean, I remember you at Lifetime. I'd go to Lifetime, see you, and, hey, what's up, JJ? How many years have you been doing this?
So it's been probably 12 or 13 years I've been training people, I think. So that's been my full-time job for the last 12 or 13 years, along with going to school full-time in the past. So
now, just real quick, and then I'm going to go back to Tina here. JJ is married to Beth, and Beth Thomas. And Beth is also one of the strongest women, like, in the world. I mean, she's got records. I mean, she's got national records, doesn't she? And, like, she just did Strong Woman and Tina in the same contest that Tina did. She's done Olympic weightlifting. She's an amazing athlete.
It's not the most fun thing being the inferior athlete in your family, but Beth is a much better strength athlete than I am. She's been at a world-class level for, I don't know, at least 10 years in powerlifting and just getting to dabble into some strongman stuff. So it's a big change of pace, but she's used to that cardio stuff too. So once I have to dip my toes in this inferior sport of strongman, I have to pick up my conditioning quite a bit, actually. So,
well, JJ, thanks for joining us. You're welcome here anytime, and I'd still love to have you on as a regular. I mean, if you'd be willing, I'd love to have you on. And I mean, you pretty much judge all the powerlifting meets. You've judged meets for many, many years. And like, if you talk about Michigan and you talk about powerlifting in Michigan, you think of JJ Thomas and Clay Brandenburg. So, and also, I can't tell you how much you've helped me over the years. I mean, like, I'd be a barbell and you'd say, hey, dummy, do this or whatever, as JJ's so tactful. But, I mean, I really appreciate everything you've done for me over the years with, like, in the gym and whatnot. So you're a good guy, man.
Yeah, I'll definitely be back on this podcast for sure. So,
all right. Well, thanks for coming, JJ. I appreciate it. We'll let you drink your protein shake and get ready for your workout. Yeah. So, Tina, let's get back to you because you're awesome and you're not. You shit rainbows, remember?
Right.
All right. So when you guys started Strength Depot, like, what did you envision? What was your, like, what was your goal? I mean, is this your goal? Or tell me about it, please.
So when we started, like I said, we wanted to have members that were friends or that we knew well, that we liked to train with. Our original size of the first location was, I believe, 2,800 square feet. It was smaller, definitely. Maybe it was a little smaller than that. We outgrew that space in the first 6 months, and then we were offered a larger space in the same complex by the building owner. We moved into there and got kicked out within 6 months because we made too much noise. Despite the fact that they knew we were a gym, I guess nobody complained in the other location, so they were quite surprised when the people with their finely calibrated instruments did not like us being down the hallway from them. So we also were outgrowing that space as well, and when we got this space, it was roughly double the size of where we had been, and it's all usable space, so we walled off a small portion of it for an office storage area, but the rest is wide open gym. So this is actually about double what I was expecting to have or what I had actually anticipated we'd end up being. And I quite honestly think we could outgrow this space as well, although I'd like to not do so because this is not a job for me. This is a hobby and my day job. I can't leave my day job to sit at the gym. So I would like the gym to stay around the size that it is. Excuse me. And maybe, you know, we could probably handle maybe 70 members, and after that, people are going to be tripping over each other. So I think, right, we're almost at the sweet. We're at a sweet spot right now. We're paying the bills. We have a little bit left over to buy equipment. So right now, it's kind of like almost perfect the way it is, actually. I wish we had air conditioning is the only thing that I would change. But
my question for you is, and I think I asked this of Shane prior, but what do you look for in members? I mean, like, because I'm sure you've turned away plenty of people.
Yes.
But, like, what do you look for in members in a gym like this?
Well, so a little bit of socially awkward is okay. socially inept is maybe not. I'm a real, like, gut feeling person. And I kind of go with how I feel when I meet the person. I see how they interact with other people in the gym. if I think they're a little weird, I'll tell them they have to do a drop-in first. And then if they do the drop-in and people like them, then they're in. If they do the drop-in and people are like, that dude was fucking weird, they're not coming in. If you come in Vibrams, I'm probably not going to let you be a member. I mean, I'm just saying that happened. That was one thing that one guy did not get a membership offer because he came in toe shoes. No. So,
oh, that's what those are?
Yeah, those were. They're toe shoes.
I didn't know they had a name.
No, Vibrams, five toe shoes. So if you're wearing five toe shoes, you should be at CrossFit, not at Strength Depot.
Matt Ambrosi.
Wait, uh-oh. What's that?
You hear that, Matt Ambrosi?
I mean, you can wear them, but just don't wear them for your first meet and greet, because my initial impression will not be favorable. And I honestly just kind of go with how the person interacts. I take care of patients all day long. I have very good people skills. I can talk to people. I can get... Fuck you, JJ. I can get to the root of a problem pretty quickly, and I can really kind of figure people out pretty quickly. And usually my first impression is correct on people. So if I get a weird sense on somebody, they're probably not going to be offered membership. We'll put them on a wait list, and they might not get off of it.
So how long was JJ on a wait list?
Well, let me tell you. I'm going to let JJ and Shane tell the JJ story when they're both on the podcast together, because it was kind of funny how JJ came here, but... like, JJ's hard to read, and it took me about 6 months before I even knew if he liked me at all. I just couldn't tell, but he saved my head from a Atlas stone rolling on it about twice. So he saved my income earning potential. So I'm going to say he's an okay guy. And now after I've trained with him for, you know, as long as I have, he's great, you know. But it is funny how it all kind of transpired, because nobody could read JJ when he first got here.
I didn't know how to read JJ at first. Like, when I was at Barbell, I had no idea if the guy liked me. I had no idea if he was like, is this guy really like this? Is he, yeah. He's always yelling at me. What's going on? Yeah, he's always yelling at me.
So yelling is good. Got it. So members. So, yeah. So with rare exception, if you're not completely ridiculous, you're probably going to be okay. If you can get along with others and you're not an asshole, like, that's the cardinal rule. Pick up your stuff. Don't be an asshole. Have good gym etiquette. So if you've never been in a gym before, this probably isn't the right place for you either. So back to the goals. Our goal was to have a gym for people that were serious competitors or people that wanted to compete, to be able to train with like-minded people that were as dedicated and as motivated as they were. So that's the right environment for success, in my opinion. And so that's what we've really strived to create here, and I think we've done so. We have taken a couple people that were more novice because we could see that they had athletic potential. But in general, most people that come here have either a sports background, a powerlifting background, strongman background, or, you know, they're real passionate about stuff, and it shows. That's the people that we want here, because that's what motivates other people to continue to excel. And there's a lot of strong people here. So strong people are good, in my opinion, because they really push you to get stronger. If you got somebody just a little bit stronger than you, you are chasing that so you can surpass them. I don't have a lot of testosterone. Well, I might. I'm a female, but I think I'm pretty competitive, so maybe I'm a little... I should probably get my levels checked, but I still want to beat everybody. So if I want to, I can only imagine what the men here are like, but I mean, I want to catch everybody that's a little bit better than me and pass them in general. So it's just, it's that... It lights your competitive fire to be training in a facility like this with a group that's so supportive and sincerely wants you to succeed, but they also want to kick your ass. So, I mean, it's just... I've never been happier in a gym, and it was always kind of a dream of mine to have a gym/bookstore/coffee shop. So I've got one of the three kind of taken care of. So two to go.
How do you balance everything between your career, owning a gym, training for your events?
Well, sometimes I balance it poorly. My sleep suffers. Shane gets a lot of shit from me when I'm having stress. And I guess I balance it by leaning on people when I need to lean on them and trying to, like, be aware of how I'm behaving. The main stressors for me are really work kind of issues and sleep issues. So if I get good sleep, I can handle everything. If I don't get good sleep or work starts to become an issue, it spills over into everything else. So I guess I manage it by, you guys probably noticed, I'm not here every single night. So I do not come to the gym every night. I am probably here 4 or 5 days a week at most. And I'm here for no more than, some days I'm here for 4 hours. Most days I'm here for less than two. I keep it as a compartmentalized as part of my life, not my whole life. Because I have too many other things that I'm doing all the time. I cannot devote any more time or energy to the gym than I already do. So it gets what I have to give it, and I really am good at setting boundaries. I'm very good at telling people no. I know what I need to do to take care of me, and so if something is going to affect my ability to be healthy, I can say, no, I can't do that. I'm sorry, I won't be able to do that. I usually don't apologize anymore. I just say no, because I don't have to apologize. I'm just not available to do it. So I'm actually in the process now of I've accepted a job offer in Indiana that is going to pay significantly more than I make currently, and I'll be commuting home 3 days a week from Indiana and staying in Indiana the other four. Luckily, Dan Gibson's 8 miles away from where I'm going to be working, and I'll be able to train at Strength Haven. Hey, Dan. So, you know, fortunately for me, my training will not suffer. I will have extra disposable income, which will also make me feel more relaxed. And so I think it's all going to flow well. And Shane gets to, like, not have me around 4 days a week, which probably will be awesome for him. So he'll miss me when I'm gone, and vice versa. And so I think, you know, it's really just a matter for me of really limiting what I will agree to do and not do, and knowing what I can actually handle and can't handle. Sometimes I don't do it perfectly, but I have a pretty good handle on it now, and I've been successful despite a lot of demands on my life in general. So
with a full plate like that, like, what do you do? Like, how do you unwind?
I don't want to talk about that on this podcast. I mean, the gym is one outlet for me. I channel my frustration and anger into things that are physical. So it might be the gym, it might be, you know, other stuff. I'm not going to talk about that, but I do a lot of kind of introspective thinking and trying to figure out why I'm feeling this way or that way, because sometimes when I'm reacting to things that I know otherwise wouldn't bother me, it's from something else. I'm just pretty I have good insight into what makes me tick, and so I know when something's not ticking right that I need to correct it. I guess I just try to nip things in the bud now instead of letting them spin out of control. So I don't know. This has been a long, like, decades of me learning how to balance this shit. This is starting in medical school, and I was always doing something else. I was never just being a medical student or being an intern or being a resident. When I was a resident, I was single, so I had, like, a full-time dating job on top of my rec, 'cause I was dating, like, a lot. And I was on, like, Match or whatever at the time in Texas, and, I mean, I think I dated the whole San Antonio area, like, one after another, trying to find the right person, and I didn't find them. But,
you're welcome, San Antonio.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, you know, there's a lot, I mean, there's not a lot of fit people there, so it was easy pickings. But, you know, so whatever, you know, I never can just do one thing, so I think I'm more comfortable if I have multiple things that I'm juggling, because it probably allows me to just do stuff and not sit around and think too much. So it's also a distractor. But that's what I'm comfortable with, and that's what makes me happy. At the end of the day, when I've accomplished something or I've met another goal, unfortunately, I'm not able to sit still and enjoy that goal. I've got the next one already in mind, but that's a, you know, that's a character flaw, but it's also to the benefit of the people in my life, because I'm always doing more and getting more and making life better as much as possible for everyone that's in it. So,
but it kind of helps too, just being blunt, straightforward, to the point too. Kind of no miscommunications. You can kind of get across exactly what you want. And you qualify for Worlds, right?
Oh yeah.
Are you? Is that what's next for you?
Yeah. I'm doing Lee Woody's competition Labor Day weekend in Florence, Kentucky, y'all. And Shane will be doing that one as well. I think a couple other gym members are doing it as well. Bob Pensari, I think Jake Maloney's doing it. And so that one's just kind of more of a training comp, although I've won it every year I've done it, so I'd like to win again. But this year I'd like to do it as a middleweight, not as a master, so we'll see how that goes. Then after that will be Women's Pro Worlds. The only thing I'm really scared about is the 100-pound circus dumbbell. The biggest circus dumbbell I put overhead is like 75 pounds, so that's, you know, I got to increase it by 33% in a few months, and I'll do it. So I might only get one rep, but I'll do it. So that's kind of what I've got. So I've always got something coming up, but that's the upcoming competitions. But you're right, I'm really blunt. I'm very direct. I was in the military for 17 years. I don't fuck around. I scare everybody at work. You know, they know I'm nice, but they know that I'm going to not cut. You know, I'm not mincing words. I tell people the way I feel, or what they did wrong or what I did wrong, to apologize for it. And I'm very direct and straight, and you'll always know where you stand with me. I'm never one of those people that's not direct with you about how I feel.
Some people, I, for one, I appreciate that. You kind of cut the bullshit out the way. You get straight to the point. There's no mixed signals, you know?
I'm not scared of you. I'll fight a girl.
No, but Shane is really... Shane is the good cop. I'm the bad cop, I think, in a lot of ways. I'm the financial, like, half of the duo where I'm running the, you know, the collecting the bills and making sure people are paying, and I'm contacting members and sending them their, you know, their invoices again, saying, hey, asshole, you need to pay. I mean, normally I just say, your membership's due, do you mind paying? You know, I'm not rude to people. I don't want it to come off like that, but I'm very direct, and I'm not like, oh, hey, you owe us $60. Do you think you could pay us? It's, hey, you're in my gym. Can you please pay your membership? Thank you. So, luckily, if it were just me, I think we'd have less members. I mean, quite honestly, I am not the person that is the finesser. I am the blunt object. And Shane is the one that finesses and, you know, is really more of the social networking guy. And that's okay. We actually work really well together because we both are strong where the other person isn't as strong. I'm not saying I'm socially inept. I'm not. But he's definitely more socially graceful than I am and emotionally intelligent, I think, about how to approach people. So,
I think you guys make a good team as gym owners. Like I said, I don't know of another gym that's run like this. And then on top of that, like we've talked about this on numerous podcasts, gym members will come in and just bring in pop and water and Gatorade and beer and whiskey and bourbon. And yeah, we got 3/5 of whiskey up right now.
And rye. There's some rye up there.
Yep, we got some rye. Thank you, Breckenridge. And we got some Woodford Reserve, Travis City Whiskey. But members will come in and they'll bring, you know, food. They'll bring in, like when we do a podcast, usually people will bring in food for the podcast and, you know, like whatever, just people chip in. And then we have a box here, like that's got like, you know, it's like a lockbox and people put money in there here and there, or people bring in stuff, but there's never been an issue. And again, I attribute that to you and Shane and the way that you instill, like, I guess more of a, I mean, let's put it this way. I'm social, so like I talk to everybody, and when I come in the gym, I usually hug every single person in the fucking gym. It's ridiculous. It's pretty slutty if you think about it, but that's me. But that's because I love everybody in here. But that's a testament to you and Shane. And I think Mike, when you came in the first time, what was your thoughts when you came into Strength Depot the first time, and when you met Tina and Shane?
Because I'm more of an introvert, kind of quiet, keep to myself. Like I do socialize, but it's not like my first kind of feelings. But like when I first walked in, you know, Tina's like I'm a huggy person, you know. I hugged her, and I, like I said before, I make my rounds with everybody. Like they made me feel welcome. It was you know, nobody was rude or anything like that. And back to what you said about the gym fees, I feel it's a discount, you know. It's like you should be charged at least like twice as much, from not just from you know, the key that you get, the equipment that they have, but like also the knowledge that the members have. Like the knowledge, the wealth of knowledge here is you know, it's powerful.
It's really second to none. I mean, you think about it, and like you have this cornucopia of great things. I mean, truly, you've got the best equipment, you've got the two best gym owners, you've got the best people, you've got Sour Patch dispensers. Like, I think we're going to try and get one by the Monolift, which would be even better. We've got, like I said, beer in the fridge, water in the fridge. Everybody's willing to spot. Everybody's willing to help. Got James Blake walking around as one of the strongest dudes I've ever seen. James just waved hi. But we've really got a great thing going here. And it's like, I feel that there's like, we all have a sense of ownership because of it. Like, it's not just a family thing, but I can honestly tell you, if we saw somebody, and it goes for every single member, if there was some member that wasn't putting their shit away, or if there was somebody that was trying to take somebody's shit, because we all leave our shit here. Like, we leave in the back room, we all leave our shit here, nobody worries about it, but if we saw somebody do something that we thought was a detriment to the gym or the members, they wouldn't be here anymore. They wouldn't be here anymore at all. So it's just a detriment. I mean, it's a testament to you and Shane. So we as gym patrons and people that are here appreciate it. Like you're probably not told that enough, but we appreciate it more than you know. And again, this is my unicorn. This is where this is where I'm. You guys are gonna have to kick me out. That's what I'm saying. So I got a question. I asked Isa and I asked Jen this. Okay. When they started, yeah, you can go ahead and drink my water. No, go ahead. Go ahead. It's just herpes.
Oh, good. I'm all right.
When you started lifting, I mean, you were in the military and you've, you know, in the medical field and all that stuff, so you've always probably felt empowered. When you started to get stronger and you started to get, like, where you, I don't know if you felt your own, or when you started to get stronger and see progress, was that empowering to you, and did that carry on in your normal life? Or, I mean, you're a little bit different story than a lot of women because, you know, you were in the military, you were an MD, how does strength play in your normal life?
In male-dominated fields.
Yeah,
you know?
In a male-dominated field.
I mean, I don't know that I feel any more empowered from lifting. I feel like I am shaped better. I feel like I can not worry about a broken hip when I'm 90. I have bone density of a 23-year-old, according to my DEXA scan. A man, not a woman. I've never felt unempowered as a woman. Okay. I would say that I find it more gratifying to accomplish a goal, but the actual the being strong part is not what makes me feel empowered. I feel empowered because I've empowered myself through my whole life, and I didn't start that way. So this is something that I have become with my schooling and my military service and my adaptability that's kind of been forced upon me. I've been forced to become very flexible and adaptable in life. I'm not in my personal life as much, but overall things that happen to me in life, I've had to roll with a lot of stuff. And so I guess I'm empowered because I've taken my own power to be able to shape my own destiny. I don't think that the lifting has changed that much. It's maybe augmented it slightly, but I've been lifting for so long that I don't find that it's just who I am, and it's never not been a part of me as a from teenager on to some degree. So I don't think it's changed me at all.
Okay.
Oh, give me a water. So
you can drink my water. That's fine.
I got one. I'm good. Thank you.
I just think, like, I have a, like, when you get looks, like when you get looked at, I was talking to Isa and Jan.
I don't notice this stuff.
You don't notice when people look at you for being strong? And
I am oblivious to attention. I don't see people looking at me, partially because I can't see. My eyesight is awful. But I don't notice. And I was actually out with Jen and Rob yesterday at the DIA, and Rob was talking to Jen and I about how we were walking and just men's heads were swiveling as we were walking by to watch us walk away. I'm like, shit, I didn't see it. Like, I do not notice this stuff. I didn't know Shane wanted to even go out on a date with me when he asked if I, you know, like all this, like I'm just oblivious to attention. And I think it's because I'm just kind of self-contained and I don't really, I care what other people think, but it doesn't make me do things differently necessarily. So maybe I just don't notice. I don't know. I've always been oblivious. I'm the last one to know if somebody's interested in me. I'm like, oh, no kidding. Wow. And I don't know. I don't, it's weird.
For any females listening, for any males listening, I mean, I think you guys got to listen to Tina's story. I mean, it's, if you want a role model to be successful and to empower yourself, it's not just, like I said, it's not just lifting for Tina. It's the military service. It's finding a goal and exceeding it, and then finding another goal and exceeding it. And if you want to talk, like, I mean, Tina is a role model for all people, not just for women in general, but what a great role model for women. So, I mean, if you wanted to talk, let's say a woman wanted to get interested in lifting and she wanted to start, like, she just wanted to start lifting. She'd never lifted before. And what advice could you give to her? Like, what advice could you give to her? She wants to do, like, maybe she wants to do powerlifting, or maybe she wants to do strong women, or maybe she wants to do just physique sports. What advice can you give to her?
I think the first thing you should do is explore what you're planning on doing and make sure it's something that you want to do, like understand what you're getting yourself into, and then get a coach. Like, actually get somebody when you first start that knows what they're doing, because it's really hard to erase bad habits once they've set in to your kind of muscle memory. It's very difficult to retrain things to move in a different way if you got trained wrongly in the first place, which for me in Olympic lifting, I had to unlearn a lot of things that I was taught incorrectly. Initially, it's difficult. So I would say get yourself knowledge, be, you know, really aware of what you're getting into, and then hire somebody to get you into it in the best way possible so that you actually go where you're trying to get to as quickly as you can get there. Uh-oh. Mike's not prepared. I can keep rambling. but I think, you know, I think a lot of women think they want to, a lot of women still are under the misconception that you're going to get bulky if you lift. And you know what? I don't know. I've never been sorry to put on muscle. I have huge traps. I don't care. My clothing doesn't fit right anymore. My ass is too big. And you know what? I don't care. I think it's amazing. But know that that's what you're, you know, want what you're getting into. Know what you're getting into. Don't worry about getting bulky. You can be a woman and have muscle and still be womanly. It's like, just embrace it. It's an amazing kind of thing to be able to just do what the hell you want to do and not worry about society's pressure on you. Just do what you want to do because you are able to do that because you're a woman and that's what you want. Just do it. But do it right. Do it with guidance and with knowledge.
I think that's an awesome point. We have two people that are joining us real quick. We have Armand, who is trying to qualify for the Arnold after already qualifying for the Arnold. And we have Kat. And Kat, you heard what Tina said about like women and just doing what you want to do and just set a goal and do what you want to do. Kat came from a bodybuilding, well, she came from a physique background. And now Kat is a powerlifter and she's a strong woman. So Kat, you know, like, what do you have to say to that as far as for empowering yourself?
Empowering myself.
Well, not empowering yourself, but what do you have to say as far as for, like, if to women that want to start lifting and might not know what to do, like, what advice could you give to them?
One of the big things is not to be scared to ask people questions. I think a lot of new people, especially women, when they go into the gym, they are a little intimidated, like everyone else. But everyone in the like fitness world or even just strength building, you want to see each other progress. And so if you are unsure about something or have questions on what does this muscle work, how do you learn the different mechanics, even though some people may look big and bad, I hate to say it, definitely don't be afraid to just tap them on the shoulder. I am more than willing to help anyone that comes around. I've seen people who have started lifting. I've gone up, said, you know what, you're doing this great. Your form is here. Can I add a suggestion? And I've had people, especially women, be like, yes, give me advice, and get all super excited because somebody's coming up and helping them guide them. So
Armand, thank you, by the way, Kat. I just wanted your input into that because Kat's done a very, she's got a very fit physical background as well. And Armand's got a very physical background. And he's now he was going to start training for strongman, but eventually he trained in powerlifting. And now he's a nationally ranked powerlifter. And he qualified for the Arnold and he ended up getting, they said that they raised the qualification total for the Arnold. So now Armand's training for the Arnold. So I just wanted to bring you on. I wanted you to say hi, man.
Hello, this is Armand. Thank you for having me on the show, Chuck. And yes, my physical background, I actually was a soccer player before I got into powerlifting or strongman. And I was about 190 pounds when I started.
A big motherfucking soccer player.
I was called foot fairies.
We are called foot fairies, but I was a keeper, so I didn't do any of the dribbling. I just blocked balls for a living. I block balls for a living. That's exactly what I did. I actually played at Catholic Central, and then I played at Wayne State, and I actually shattered my right kneecap. Yes. Oh, yeah, it was terrible. And then I found the gym. I started out in Powerhouse Novi, where I met Chuck, on Deadlift Thursday. Yeah. Those were the fun days. And one of the trainers said I would be he'd be pretty good at powerlifting. 4 months later, I signed up for my first powerlifting meet, and I won. And it's been history ever since. And honestly, it's been a lot of fun. I went from 190 to about 250, 260 of just straight fats because I couldn't do anything on my knee. And then I cut down some weight, went to 220, and now I compete at 242. And yes, I did qualify for the Arnold back in January, but they raised the bar on me from, let me see, what was it? It was 1680 to qualify for a total. It's now 1875. That is a huge astronomical jump, almost 200 pounds. And I am going to be going for a 1900-pound total in October. So
what meet is that, Armand?
That is an RPS meet in it's the Lexan Fall Classic, run by RPS and Dan Dagg.
So
That is in Columbus, Ohio. So I'll be taking my talents to Ohio.
We're all going to be there cheering you on. So we're all going to be cheering you on. I just wanted the listening public to, like, this is Tina's podcast, and as she deserves a podcast to herself. But I just wanted people to get a sense of the people that we have in this gym as well, and the amazingly qualified athletes that we have in here that are some of the best fucking people you're ever going to meet in your life. So thank you both for coming on. I really do appreciate it. And I would like to talk to both of you in the future on the podcast, if you'd be so kind.
Absolutely. I think we would both love to be on there.
Yep.
Also, I want to say thank you, Tina, for having Strength Depot along with Shane. In all honesty, this is a collection of wonderful people, especially the select few that you guys were able to let into the gym. So it's been a fun ride. So thank you for that one.
It's not just a collection of people. We are a big family of misfits with different backgrounds. And literally, we are just a bunch of clowns having a good time, but we also want to see each other progress. So it's nice to have a supportive family inside and actually outside the gym whenever you need it.
So thank you, Tina and Shane, for that one.
Yep, you're welcome.
I want to be there for the person that calls him a foot fairy.
Thank you, guys. Well, I think what we're going to do is wrap this up, Tina.
Yep.
We got a really nice hour. We would like to give thanks to Becky from Tricovery. Becky, it's a funny story. Becky said, you know, I have like a torn labrum and probably my supraspinatus and my shoulder is fucked. So I can't press and I can't squat. So I really can't do shit. So Becky works on a lot of like powerlifters, like pro powerlifters. She works on the Lions. She does like, she's like a, I want to read what Becky does so I don't fucking get it wrong. She does like facial stretch therapy. She does like a lot of things as far as for like flexibility. Jeff Kong is the owner, but Becky, if you have like ailments or if you have things that are maybe like, you know, stuck, or let's say you have like, I don't know, scar tissue or whatever, Becky's amazing at working through it. So Becky said, hey, look, you know, Chuck, why don't you come on up and I'll see what I can do about your hip and your shoulder. So I'm like, okay, I'm thinking, ah, cool. This is going to be a nice little massage. Oh, this would be real fucking relaxing, right? Maybe she'll have some incense. That's what I'm thinking. Indian music. I don't know. I have no idea. So the day before I go in, Becky sits me down and she's like, hey, Chuck, your shoulder's shitty. I'm like, yeah. So she goes, lie down on the ground in the gym. So I do. And she takes her fucking heel and puts it in my lat and caused me so much pain that I didn't know what to do. Then she digs her fucking fingers in my lat and she pretty much got me an extra 20 degrees range of motion from my lat.
Nice.
So then I go, okay, I'm going to go in. It can't all be fucking bad. So I go into Tricovery, and Becky worked on me for about 90 minutes, and I was asking her what the fucking safe word was because I was scared to death. Like, honestly, I said, Becky, do you do this to all the guys, or are you just having fun at me? But I can honestly tell you, I can squat. I can squat. Like, she activated my glute, and she kind of helped my piriformis, and she stretched that out. And I can fucking squat now, and I haven't been able to squat for a year, maybe. And, like, my shoulder range of motion kind of, it's a little bit better, but, like, I have Becky to thank from Tricovery, and I just wanted to say thank you so much, Becky.
I have a blurb about Tricovery, too. Shane and I actually met in person in the lobby of Tricovery. That's where we met. So I used to go see Jeff. I also see Becky. They are fantastic, 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 fantastic. I can't praise them enough. Becky is actually a kinder, gentler Becky now, so she's not quite as vicious as she was on Chuck.
She scares the fuck out of me.
But she's done some additional training where they instructed her on ways to make it less excruciatingly waterboardy in general. So you definitely will get improved function out of anybody at that facility. It's fantastic.
I actually asked her where the gag ball was. So
we have a ball gag here now. So
we have a ball gag here?
Yeah, I bought it as a joke gift for
no
Shane.
Shit.
So he could put it on and not talk to me when he trains.
Totally going to use that. If anybody wants to call Tricovery, I'm going to give out the number. It's in Michigan. It's in Novi, Brighton, and Bloomfield Hills. I know this sounds like a plug, but I can't tell you how much it helps me to be able to squat again. After all this last year, I haven't been able to, but now I can fucking squat. So, you know, call me a believer here. Hallelujah. The number is 248-773-8242. The team there is just fantastic. I can't say enough about them.
Also, check out the website at tri-covery.com. It's tri-covery.com.
Tina, I can't thank you enough for not only being here, coming in on your off day, for having this great gym for us to train in, and, you know, for being my friend. I mean, I all that stuff means the world to me. So, like, I think you're a great role model for not just women, but for people in general. And people could learn something from you and the way that you attack things that you want. And I can't thank you enough for being here and for being our friend.
No, I really appreciate you guys. I'm glad that what we do is important to so many people because it's really important to us. And, I mean, we truly love and appreciate our members. And, you know, I'm really just bowled over that this has gotten as good as it has. But, I mean, we got a 3-year lease here, so it's just going to get better. So, yeah, so thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I didn't think I could talk about myself that much, but I guess I can. So that's good.
So I think we're going to end this here. For Mike and for Tina, and I'm Chuck. We're going to say thank you very much for joining us again at Strength Depositions, and we'll see you again real soon.
Later.